Welcome, welcome, welcome. Just doing that because I don't ever know if this thing's actually live or not. We are here once again for the sixth round post-fight show for UFC 300. I am your host, as always, Zane Simon, with my co-host, as always, Eddie Mercado. And man, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I don't know. I'm going to be buzzing.
Motherfucker, it's already tomorrow where I am.
Yeah, okay. I don't have that problem, but I don't care. I'm staying up all night. I'm going to go run laps. I'm hyped.
Greatest UFC, card ever, for sure.
UFC 300. Yeah, I mean, it is the best card I have watched in a long, long time.
Ever, Zane, ever. You have never seen a better card ever in your life. And I know this because I've seen the same shit you've seen.
I know. I remember other times that I was this hype, but it has been for fucking ever.
Yeah.
It has been a long time.
And, you know, I saw in the news that Iran was shooting missiles at Israel or something, maybe.
That's not what we're here to talk about.
No, but it is, because I was like, oh, the world's ending. Cool. At least we get a series finale for the UFC. So I was prepared for the world to just blink out of existence watching the greatest card of all time. I was ready for it. I was ready to go, Zane, is what I'm saying.
All right. Well, I'm glad you have accepted and embraced the nuclear winter future that is coming for all of us.
Yeah.
The meantime, let's talk about this fucking card, because it was absolutely amazing. And
I only got two picks wrong tonight. And that's only because I took the flyer on Cody. And I knew I shouldn't have done it. But I did it anyways. And then I picked against Max, which shouldn't have done that either. But those were the
Yeah. We all picked against Max. We all did. It was the sadness hedge. It was the sadness hedge pick where we all knew, I don't want to feel bad if Max loses, so I'll pick against him. If he loses, then at least I've picked right. And if he wins, then I don't care. I'm really happy. You know, he won. Awesome. But yeah, let's go ahead right now and just Alex Pereira, Jamal Hill, and man, like, I knew going in that this did not stack up well for Jamal Hill as a striking battle. It was not a good match for him and the thing he likes to do best. But man, the moment Alex Pereira could even like assert a little advantage, it's just like, okay, we're done. That's it. That's all I need. We're not gonna
like the Sean Strickland fight, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you play for a second. But yep, the moment I get my timing, it's a wrap. And it's funny, too, because you see the moment when it happens, when Poatan gets his timing. Because right at the same time, Hill kicks him in the junk, right?
Yeah.
As the referee's coming to stop Poatan goes,
No,
I'm going to knock him out. And he goes and fucking knocks him out with this crazy left shovel hook, drops him, eyes roll back, he gets on top and fucking smashes him and pounds him out. Epic.
Beautiful. And the thing, look, you know what? Credit to them. This was the best night of Rogan and DC in the booth in a long, long time. And one of the things that they really got right was pointing out there's Pereira stepping in early and he starts jabbing the body. And Hill starts swiping at the jab and just kind of cupping it out of the way. And DC was like, you don't want to do that, because he's just going to come right back up over the top of that with the left hook, because you're pawing. And sure as shit, he just absolutely, and I mean, especially that little shovel angle, because then it's like he's really dipping to make it look like you don't know where that punch is going. And Hill's not braced for it. It comes right up over the top and just absolutely smashed him. Beautiful, beautiful moment. And yeah, I mean, you know, Hill has always had some wonky footwork, some wonky head movement, some wonky upper body movement where kind of, you know, he's got a little Sean Strickland in him where you're like, okay, you're doing a lot of things that work for you, but they shouldn't, you shouldn't be leaning on that stuff.
Man, and this, no, go ahead. Sorry.
I have to say, it's not actually a lot of fighters at light heavyweight that can take advantage of that. But Pereira is like, he is that dude. If you are going to just make some big, huge error technically as a striker, he is not going to let you pass on that.
Same thing with Sean Strickland.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. And I picked Poatan here because of the X factors. I'm not even going to lie. If I felt like Hill was a little rushed getting back to action. And I even think he looked a little soft in the midsection out there from, you know, not being able to walk, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's why I picked Hill. Had openings, right, with the way Poatan fights. He's hittable, yeah. Especially straight punches. It's like he doesn't see him coming.
Yeah, and I mean, he tends to, like, the arsenal he walks forward with, you know, it's the jab to the body, the low kick, the hook over the top. It's a pretty, like, fairly simple arsenal that he's coming at you with pressure. It's just terrifying because he's huge and he's fast and he's powerful. So if you have to guess even a little bit, even between three or four things, you're in real danger. But if you know, as we saw with Adesanya, if you can just bite down and go through the fear and go after him in return, yeah, he's not the most sound or special defensive fighter out there, the craftiest guy in that respect.
Even Yuri was catching him with just his greatest punches ever.
Yeah,
but no, this was great. And the knockout was cold, the way he like stopped the referee from giving a break once he had his timing. But then the way he celebrated was just insane also with the double.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, oh, you want to bring the little Easter Island head dude on the chain all busted up? Bet.
Oh, beautiful.
That's funny, dude, that's funny.
And then afterward, he's calling for a heavyweight run. And yeah.
After he beat Yuri, I tweeted that out. I was like, he needs to move up to heavyweight now and compete for that belt.
I mean, those two dudes were both 240 pounds in there. They are 2'6'4". What is Hill even like 6'5", actually? No, it's 2 6'4" men who weigh 240 pounds on fight night. They are really just like, all they got to do is not diet and they are heavyweights. That's it.
I got to see it. I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see it. And Poatan's the guy to do it. But try it.
Yeah. I don't even care if he wins it or not. It would be a thriller. I don't think they're going to make that the UFC 301 headliner. Aspinall would be. Poatan was goofy enough suggesting that he wanted to be like it to turn right around and fight in Brazil.
No. That's not goofy at all. Like, that's in his contract. He had that written into his contract.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Where if
you're
he's healthy enough to turn around and compete,
yeah,
he's got it. He can do that.
It's true. He's making the offer. So, but Aspinall would be absolutely not in his right mind to say in like 1 month's time, I'm going to fly to Brazil.
And here's why. Because he was just on his, Tom was just on his soapbox saying how everyone's ducking him.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. You got Poatan in a month. Get ready.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if he's going to actually get to fight on UFC 301, if they can find him a fight for that, a heavyweight fight. But
yeah, it should be for the BMF title.
There you go.
Poatan is BMF material.
Start getting into that. Start getting into that spam, Max. You got some weight to put on.
Spam.
Get into the locomocos.
Yeah, I mean, Max doesn't care about weight.
Yeah,
they should fight each other at heavyweight, maybe.
Oh man, amazing cat. I mean, the thing is like we'll get to it in a minute, but Holloway Gagey, like, that is like fight of the decade, fight of the year, easily sewn up,
knockout of the year,
of course. This was still the perfect cap to the evening. This is that thing, like, you don't want, think about it like a movie. You don't want your movie to end at the peak climactic moment of the movie. You need, like, you have the big climax, and then you need that little come down afterward. You need that little prologue, like, does he go to college? Does he get the girl? Does he die in Nam? What's our little after story here? And this was that perfect come down where you had, like, this huge rush, and then you still get two really great title fights afterward that were a ton of fun, and it wraps, and it just, it's perfect. Yeah. It's a perfect card, you know?
The perfect card. Damn, Zane, listen to you. The perfect card.
Hey, I've said it before too. A perfect card needs one really dead, slow fight in the middle. So Aljamain Sterling, Calvin Kattar, like, it felt like hell at the time. But it was that perfect cooler where you're like, okay, you know, I'm back to normal a little bit. It's all feeling okay again. And then you just follow that up with Jiří Procházka, Bo Nickel, Armin Saukian, Charles Oliveira, Max Holloway, Justin Gagey. You're ramping up. You're right there. And then you get that little bit of calm down. It was a beautiful night emotionally, you know?
All around, like, just the sights, the, we got crazy finishes. I mean, we got storybook endings. And to your point, just the cadence of the whole card was spectacular. And we only have to wait about 8 more years for the next one.
Yeah.
So
I'm ready.
Back to the apex we go, baby.
Okay, I'm not that ready. All right. That brings us to woman strawweight bout, Zhang Weili, Yan Xiaonan, and Zhang Weili becomes the first fighter in MMA history to get submission of the night, knockout of the night, and fight of the night all in one go, right? She got the decision win, the knockout win, and the submission win.
No, it's true. But real quick, while it's on my mind, Poatan's the first guy to defend the light heavyweight belt since John Jones left.
It's true.
That's insane. The man has not even been in the UFC for 3 years, and he already has a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah. No, it is.
Chael Sonnen getting into the fucking UFC off of a loss, or into the UFC Hall of Fame off of a loss.
That was so, I got to say, that was the, in terms of, like, making it a great night emotionally, that was also perfect because it was so goddamn goofy. Like, nothing against Chael Sonnen, nothing against Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen. I know you've got a problem with that fight getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So don't even say it yet. But for me, nothing against that fight. That was a formative emotional MMA moment for me. So I'm going to fight for it. But it was hilarious that they tried to paint that whole thing as Chael Sonnen gets into the UFC Hall of Fame, as, like, announcing it as it's, though it's just for him.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, and Anderson Silva is going with him too. Cause of course, it's like, yes, cause it's the fight. The fight is an amazing moment.
It's whack they put fights in the Hall of Fame. I think that's dumb. I think it's stupid.
It's, you know, anything the UFC can do to remind itself it actually has a past, I'm going to support. Because this promotion is all about being full steam ahead, bury yesterday's hero out back in the yard, and build up this new guy as the greatest fighter to have ever stepped in the cage.
Did Mark Coleman put the belt on Max Holloway?
Yeah. They brought him into the cage.
Did they? I completely missed it.
I know Max, like, went and talked to him, and I actually missed the actual belt putting around.
Yeah, me too.
I was shocked
at the knockout and doing like a billion.
Yes, yeah. I didn't care at that point. It's like, okay, great. They brought Mark Coleman out. They was there for the presentation. That's all that really matters. Nobody's going to remember who put the belt on what.
But no, to what I was saying, though, why I have a problem, there it is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, the... you know what I mean? It's like, you know what? Let's get James Krause in the UFC Hall of Fame at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a contributor. He should go in the contributor wing. Master, the first master gambler in UFC history.
Yeah, man. The whole Chael in the Hall of Fame, man. Come on. They'll let anybody. I might get in now.
Okay, good. I'm glad to see somebody confirming what we actually both missed watching with our own eyes. He did put the belt on him, so.
Yeah, sorry, we're derailed from the co-main event.
Yes, but anyway, the UFC, they look, the only reason they ever cared about steroids was because they needed to gas, they needed to salt that mine to sell it to Endeavor. They needed to get the uniforms in there on people. They needed to get the sponsors off the fighters and get that money going into their pockets. And they needed to get the drug testing to make it look like, because it was the TRT era. So it was a very, like...
I think that's a big part of it. And I think the other part of it is just Dana White tired of dealing with TRT.
Like, yeah,
tired of the exemptions and all this and answering the questions. So he's like, you know what? Fuck it. None of it. Just we're going to stop it right here. So it's like a tweet there.
But he's never actually cared. And it's very clear from the way he talks about this stuff. He does not care about drug test failures at all. It is a hassle he has to deal with. I still think that's why they got rid of USADA and started doing their own program. Even if we want to claim that it's just as rigorous as it was before, I don't know. It might be. They now have complete control over all the messaging throughout. So they don't have to make any of it. They don't have to. They can do whatever way they want. And that's what they want. They don't want to have to have anybody on their ass about doing anything.
Yeah. Just like they don't want journalism.
Yes.
Same just thing. Like
anyway, we are getting far afield. Weili Zhang, Yan Xiaonan. So, first of all, that was a first round technical submission. Yeah, it is. It doesn't matter if the fighter can return to their feet eventually, or even after 2 seconds. It doesn't matter if they can return to their feet after 2 seconds. If the round ends and the fighter is unconscious, that should be it. You know?
I would have been heated. If I was in Whaley's corner, I would have probably fought the ref. I'm like, that's the end of the fight. And then it got debatable. Like, it started getting close, right, as Whaley was gassing out. And that's just, that could have been an appeal had it gone the other way.
And then, well, because then you get the round two, Weili Zhang batters Yan Xiaonan so bad that, like, Yan Xiaonan did not actually functional. She moved, but she did not defend herself for a solid 30 seconds while getting beat on.
She at got least smashed. That could have been a TKO stoppage. And so the ref didn't stop the fight at the end of the first. So I gave Weili a 10-7.
Yeah, let me find this card really quick, because I want to find out if we can all be a little mad or not. That's always the point.
They did 49-46, so they gave everyone 10-8'd.
First round. Well, I have a question about that scorecard. Let me see.
But no, that was insane. I'm glad Weili ended up pulling it out and winning, but no, she should have got a couple performance bonuses for that. A couple 300 G's going her way.
Let's see. There's got to be an image of that card going out. There we are. I thought so. You know what? Not one judge did.
Yeah, the second round of 10-8.
Give the first round a 10-8.
Wait, what?
Yeah, not one judge gave the first round a 10-8.
I gave it a 10-7.
round two, and this is, you know what, and I will say, you can hate me, but I always try to guess what the judges are scoring, you know, when I'm scoring myself. I assume they would give round one a 10-9 and round two a 10-8, which is what every judge did.
That's insane to me. I'm over here with the 10-7.
Yeah, you and all the hardcore judgeophiles out there, they were all like, oh, it's a 10. Is that even a 10-6? That might be a 10-6, you know.
You can't do 10-6.
I know. But I was 10-7, like,
7 though, legit. Like, she went to
school. Weili Zhang got dropped, and the judges are turning in their, like, by the end of the round, they don't necessarily know how out of it that Yan Jianan is, and they're turning in their cards, you know, they're turning in their cards and all that. So they have a round where somebody got dropped and somebody didn't get submitted but had a choke tight on. I was like, you know what? I bet they're going to give that a 10-9. And they did. All three of them.
That's criminal. It's unfortunate. But I guess I can see how they could have missed it too.
Yeah. Right, so she got a 10-8 for round two on all three judges.
Yeah.
But not a 10-8 for any of round one. Because, I think a 49-44 would be in order. You also have to say, though, in the middle of this, Yan Jianan kind of shit the bed. I mean, this was a really incredible performance from Weili Zhang all through. But Yan Jianan in round three, she won round three. She did not step on the gas. She did not go out there when she was way fresher than Weili Zhang, and Weili Zhang was on rubber legs. She just kind of coasted around victory, banked around.
She was definitely the fresher fighter out there. And of course she would be. She took a fucking nap at the end of the first round.
Yeah.
So of course she's going to be the fresher fighter.
She got a power nap.
Yeah. I'm a big power nap fan too. Not power slap, power nap. You know, a little 10-minute nap, 15 mm-hmm. minutes. But nah, man, there was a moment, I think it was in the third. I always try to watch the live lines and see what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, round one happens, round two happens. Weili, a monstrous favorite. But by the end of the third, they had switched. And Weili was at dog odds. And Yan was like a -130 favorite. And I'm like, what the fuck? That's insane. Because she should already have like those two rounds, a 10-7 and a 10-8. Like the math ain't mathing. So it's like, worst case, this is a draw if Weili doesn't get finished. Like, worst case. But, and like, I felt like Yan definitely could have got the finish there. She could have fucking.
Yeah. He did not. I was going to pull it up and answer. But Yan Jianan could have got the finish. Alex Pereira did not get a bonus. Bonuses went to Max Holloway, of course, and Justin Gaethje, of course, and Max Holloway again.
Yes.
And Jiří Procházka.
Okay.
So.
Damn right, Max. Max had a $600,000 performance for sure.
Yeah.
But Weili getting snubbed is a little fucked up.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't fight of the night, so you were, but it, you know, she didn't get a finish. So.
It was a great fight.
It was a great fight.
But she did get a finish. That's the fucked up part.
She did. Yeah, she did. She did
get a tech sub. Tech subs are automatic performance bonuses in my world.
The real losers were everybody who bet the under on Weili. Bet Weili inside the distance.
Yeah, well, that's anyone betting the under on strawweight fights deserve it.
Yeah,
what they get. You know, it's like the division you don't bet the under in.
Yeah, but yeah, it was a wild performance. Yan Jianan, she needed to go balls out in round three. Honestly, just like you have your. Zhang could barely stand upright in that round. She was so tired.
Her arms were jello.
Yep. And
guard.
Yeah. And Weili just kind of like, just, you know, won a round. She just went out there and landed some good strikes and did her thing. But it was never any like, I am waving you back up and just trying to blast you as hard as I can over and over again.
Yeah.
And that definitely was
a big moment to learn from.
Yeah.
She really needs to get her grappling squared away.
That's the other thing, of course. Entering a title fight with a ground game that can just be shut down that easily, you know. Shouldn't happen.
Nah. It was cool, though. It was a cool fight. It almost pissed me off. It was that close to pissing me off. Like, I felt the blood starting to boil here.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I'm glad Zhang pulled it out. She recovered while Yan was trying to, like, you know, take rounds, but not dominate. Weili Zhang was recovering, and she had a great second wind coming back late, and, you know, started dominating again for a really, really good dominant wind all the way through. Honestly, the third round ended up being more of an aberration than anything.
Yeah.
All right, that brings us, though, to our fight of the night, fight of the year, fight of the decade, whatever you want to call it. Max Holloway with his living legend moment. Like, I get Max Holloway was already a great fighter. He's already a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, whatever you want to call it. He was already one of the best featherweights of all time, all that stuff. This is Max Holloway's legend in his own time. Every one of the all-time great fighters of all time moments.
Immortalized.
Just like for him to go up a division against one of the biggest punchers he's ever faced.
Biggest kicker. Well, Aldo might be a bigger kicker, but like as far as like horsepower though,
yeah,
just the hardest striker.
Just and in a career for Aljo full of, you know, full of powerful, dominant athletes. But to go up against somebody who's such a powerhouse up a division the way he did, you know, 5 years ago against Dustin Poirier, and Poirier shut him down in that fight, just stopped his momentum. Every time he started to build, he shut him down. For Holloway to come back up and go up against Gaethje, coming off the best performance of Gaethje's career against Dustin Poirier, and for him to go and do that, and to just to put on such a consummate performance against him, where he lured Gaethje onto the front foot, sniped him, picked him off, made him overextend, and every time Gaethje hesitated and tried to just lean on the counter or whatever, Holloway made him pay for that too, and just picked and, you know, sniped at him round after round, building this pressure and building this offense to the point that Gaethje was so busted up that he was shutting down with every hard shot. To do all that, and then for Gaethje to come back and drop Max in the fourth round for the first time in his whole career. This is the first time Max Holloway has ever been dropped in his whole career. True. By Justin Gaethje in the fourth round. And for Holloway to take that moment, not take one backward step, not get dissuaded one little bit, not to have one tiny bit of his confidence broken, but to just throw down with me right here, right now, middle of the octagon. I have this fight totally in the bag, and I want to go. We're going to go to war because this is this dumb gimmick BMF title, but we're going to put meaning on it, actually make it worth something. And to fucking face plant Justin Gaethje like that with 1 second left. I mean, it's just the coolest goddamn shit I've seen in a long, long time.
It's one of the most iconic moments in MMA history.
Absolutely.
It's the stuff dreams are made of. It's the stuff you dream about, right? Like that's for Max. He tried to do that before, right? With Lamas, was it?
Yeah, with Ricardo Lamas. Ricardo Lamas.
They just stood on the napkin and went to town, and he did it again against the one guy you probably shouldn't do that against. But fuck it, man.
Yeah.
He did it. He fucking did it. this performance should earn him UFC Hawaii.
Yeah. I mean, they've been needing to do that for so long. They've had so many stars and great fighters coming out of Hawaii for so long. The fact that it's just some like tourist board bullshit that they won't, you know, like they won't pay the UFC enough to come to Hawaii is just such bullshit. Like, just go.
Yeah, Bellator did it several times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Granted, they under different management now and on their way out, but still, they made it.
That wasn't a decision that killed Bellator. No. It was just a decision they made that, okay, we're not going to make as much money for this because we want to put the fights on here because we have fighters from here. And the fans are here. We know this. UFC knows this. The support is there. And they're just not doing it because they can't squeeze every last dollar out of it. I mean, it's like, you know, they're doing all these cards in New Jersey right now. And they're doing those fights in New Jersey because New Jersey got this huge COVID relief fund that they're not spending. And they've spent like $8 million of COVID relief money on UFC cards, buying UFC cards for New Jersey. So UFC's coming to New Jersey like two or three times a year because they get like, you know, they got like 3 million for their last pay-per-view in New Jersey. I think they're getting 5 million for this next one.
So you know? Islam and Dustin Poirier in Newark in June.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure Saryukian's pissed.
Yeah, no kidding. But
honestly, Max has a claim to that fight now.
But if Saryukian really wanted that fight, he should have won this one, huh?
What? You're crazy. You didn't score for him?
I didn't.
Damn, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, but, we'll get to that in a second. But
how about that spinning back kick to the fucking nose of Gaethje? That was wicked.
Yeah.
It's like he couldn't miss with that thing.
I was a little bit, you know, having fun with it because I'm like, okay, Gaethje, or okay, Max. We all know you should go to the body against Gaethje because he defaults to the high guard. But really, your only body shot is going to be like 12 spinning back kicks. Like, come on, you could, you know, he did some other stuff in there, but it was like such a weird, like,
he did it from punching range.
Yeah.
It was almost like what Uriah Hall did to Gegard Mousasi. Just spin a back kick to the face because Gaethje kept leaning over, like right there to it. So I wonder if that's something that Max scouted, like watching this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're scouting Gaethje over time, you've got to think, I got to go to his body and go hard because he does, you know, he goes up, he doubles over a little. It's an opening that's always been there against him. And Max, I mean, you crazy bastard, going with the spinning back kick like 10 times. I'm here for it. So we've also got somebody in here noting that apparently they've confirmed McGregor Chandler.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah, right? We reported that like what, 4 days ago?
Yes, sir. I think we were the first actually to put it out there that it was happening during fight week.
Yeah, yeah.
Per our sources, who turned out to be correct.
Indeed. White played hell with us because I think our sources thought that they were going to announce it during the pre-fight pressers, but...
Well, we have a couple different sources.
Yeah.
So one source was saying the presser, and then the pre-fight presser, and another source was saying the post-fight presser, and the post-fight presser turned out to be the one.
Yeah.
Which is why we played it the way we did.
Yeah. You know,
we just said fight week. Turned out to be true.
It might be true. It's a rumor. This is what we've heard. Fight week. It's getting announced. Anyway. Yeah, finally. I'm not even... I can't even be excited about that off this card. Like, I know McGregor is the biggest... You know, he's still the biggest superstar in the sport, but I just don't care right now.
No.
Max Holloway. He is the superstar tonight on a card full of amazing fighters who had amazing fights. Max Holloway is the man. This was his night. He stole the show. He made it happen. This is his card.
Best fight, best finish, and he was the guy lobbying for the 300K bonuses.
Yeah.
Man, what a
guy. And for, he was the guy lobbying for Mark Coleman in there too. Like, you know, all good vibes from Max Holloway.
We do not deserve Max Holloway.
Mm-mm.
We don't.
No. All right. Friends. All right. Armand Saikin, Charles Oliveira. Let's get into it. So Charles Oliveira clearly won round one, right? We can all agree on that.
Yes.
He had the tight submission in there.
Unless you want to favor the damage that Armand was doing, because he was the only one really landing the strikes. But go ahead.
But coming close to finishing the fight, you got to go.
Super tight submissions, yes.
Yeah. Round two. It's a very clear Armand Saikin round. I thought he was going to win this fight. I picked him to win this fight. I picked him to win this fight because I thought he could get on top of Charles Oliveira and probably soak up a lot of time. Charles is...
So far, so good, Zane. Let's hear where you go wrong.
We get into round three. Armand Saikin, he's winning the bulk of round three. No question. But if that round had a dominant moment, it is that late submission from Charles Oliveira. Dominant thing in that round.
No,
that should be it. It should.
What's the number one scoring criteria?
It is damage from submission.
Let me stop you. Hold on. Wait. If the number one scoring criteria is damage, how did Charles get that nasty cut around his eye? Was it from elbows? Because I'm pretty sure it was from nasty ground and pound that Saryukian was doing.
I think he ran into a door.
The aggregate of all of those ground strikes in the third meant way more and did way more damage than hanging out in a fucking darce and smiling at the ref. Sorry, not enough.
I'm going darce. I'm going smiles. I think he ran into a door. I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
that
cut. The door called Saryukian's elbow.
Look, it's a toss-up. I am not surprised that Armand Saikin won it.
It wasn't even a close darce.
Well, the judges shouldn't know that until Saikin pops up.
The judges shouldn't know when a submission is close and when it isn't.
It looked like it was in good position.
For anyone who doesn't know shit about a darce, how do you defend a darce? You roll to your stomach. You can't get darced if you're laying flat on your stomach. And that's exactly what Armand did.
All right.
Excellent submission defense. He did the damage. He should have won the fight. I think the judges got it right. It is what it is.
I'm saying Oliveira should have won it, but I can also see coming out of that, like, Armand Saikin didn't come out of that looking like you've got Dustin Poirier right there. You've got Justin Gaethje right there. Well, you've got him knocked out, not Justin Gaethje, but... You've got Dustin Poirier right there talking about how he wants... You've got Max Holloway right there as title contenders for Islam Makhachev. Armand Saikin is not that dude right at this second. Now,
I'm with you. I think Max has a better claim to it. I think Dustin just deserves it for who he is.
Yeah.
But I also think that Armand will wait and he will...
You'll get it in the fall. Because if Islam Makhachev gets what his wish, which is to fight three times this year, which is why he wants to fight in June, so he can fight in like June and fall in late summer or fall.
Probably that October Abu Dhabi card.
Yeah. So June, October, and then, I don't know, once again at the end of the year, who knows? It's probably a pipe dream.
Hold on. Was that cut caused in the third round or the second round? I thought it was the third.
People are saying... Well, one guy is saying second. Somebody else is agreeing.
I thought it was the third round.
I'm going to say second just because that supports my hypothesis. So as long as I get to be right, I say second. And Eddie, you're crazy. What are you even thinking about? Anyway, if Islam Makhachev is going to defend the belt multiple times this year, then all Saryukin has to do is wait. That's it. That's all he's got to do. And he'll get that fight.
Yeah. Yeah, he was big on that. big on like understanding he's gonna wait.
Yeah.
But you know, I think what he did tonight wasn't easy. Like we can sit here and be a little bummed because it wasn't exciting. But what he did is damn impressive. Nobody goes to the ground with Charles Oliveira without first rocking him. So yeah. For Armand to willingly do that, it shows where Armand's ground game is, and it's up the fuck here. It is as high as it gets. It's right there.
That is why I picked him, is because Charles Oliveira is a – the way he fights, it is an understanding that to beat Charles Oliveira, you have to accept the risk of fighting Charles Oliveira. If you're afraid to go chase Charles Oliveira to the ground, if you're afraid to stand in and trade with Charles Oliveira, Charles Oliveira will tear you to shreds.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to go out there and be aggressive and stay on Charles Oliveira and make him pay for the fact that he gives up guard, make him pay for the fact that he's defensively wide open when he's stepping into the pocket, make him, you know, make those errors mean something, you can beat him, but you have to be entirely brave. And Armand say you can prove that, you know, you can't take that away from him at all. He absolutely had all the balls to go in and fight Charles Oliveira in his own game. And, you know, he came away with a win. It wasn't the prettiest win, but I'm not going to argue to death. It was a good fight. I just, you know, got to have a little controversy. What's the show if we don't have a little controversy?
Yeah, no, it was a good fight. And I mean, just what Armand did is really, it impresses me for him to be able to do that.
Yeah.
No one does that.
Absolutely. All right. That brings us to a middleweight bout, Bo Nickel, Cody Brundage. And fine showing for Bo Nickel. It was what I expected, which is that honestly, Cody Brundage is a significant step up from the guys that Bo Nickel has been beating so far. Your Valentine Woodburns and Jamie Pickett's. May not seem it, but Cody Brundage is actually better than those dudes. And
yeah, for sure.
He made Nickel struggle a little. He made Nickel look like a bad striker, which he is. You know, that shouldn't be a big question. He's not a good striker.
He's a very green striker.
Yeah. Nickel still, the thing that, you know, you got to walk away impressed with, even if he didn't love his performance, is A, he didn't love his performance.
He booed himself.
And B, he still absolutely, he went further than he ever had in a fight before, and he stayed very strong on a very good positional wrestling game, even when it's clear that he doesn't yet have a lot of really solid grappling chops. Like, as a positional grappler, he's still pretty loose and doesn't have a lot of easy ways to attack. Like, he took the back and got the rear naked choke eventually, but there was a lot of him just holding good wrestling positions because he didn't actually, wasn't confident in what to grab, basically.
Yeah, well, it's a positional control thing, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, right? When you're controlling someone, you take away the space.
Yeah.
If you want to strike them, you have to give them some space. Well, you give yourself some space to posture up.
Yeah.
If you're not used to that, the second you posture up, you feel that control leave. And then it's like, oh shit, I need to hold on. And it makes you apprehensive to disengage, to throw your strikes.
Well, and the thing too is that his grappling flow is still very much a wrestler's flow. You know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, I'm here on the body lock. I'm going to transition to a front headlock. I'm going to use that to snap you down. And I'm going to go to like a cradle and try to control you that way. And it's a lot of that without a lot of the then submission attacks that you would see in more of a jiu-jitsu grappling game integrate. So, the fact, though, that even feeling like that and having to fight further than he does usually, he was very confident and still, you know, his cardio was still in great shape going with and being forced to scramble a lot with Brundage for a round and a half.
Yeah, so. I thought he did okay.
Yeah, he called out Anthony Hernandez after the fight, which I want to see it. Let's do it.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. And he called out Kopilov.
Yeah.
But he just got booked against Cesar Almeida.
Yeah, I want that fluffy fight because Anthony Hernandez, I love him, but he is not a way better striker than Bo Nickel. He is equally as totally not at home at all standing. All of his striking offense is just a mad rush to get into takedown range.
It's still more experienced.
It's still more experienced. He's a better fighter all around than Bo Nickel. But he's going to want to wrestle. He's not going to go out there and try to like, oh, I'm going to have a striking battle with this dude. It's just not.
He doesn't really go away, though.
Like, he doesn't. That's why I want to see this. I want, like, yeah, you want that fight? Do it.
Yeah, Fluffy is no pussy. I'll tell you that. The man is, he's one of those, like, unassuming, like, if you don't properly prepare in the least bit, you're fucked.
Yeah.
I love the call out too. Like that's Fluffy is not low hanging fruit.
No. And you know what? If he gets what he wants, then hey, you know, more power to him. You can't win forever, you know? As Chris Weidman found out the hard way, this sport, like you can be the best buzzsaw in the world in MMA.
Wow.
Unless you're Khabib.
You already know my conspiracy theory on what made Weidman fall off and how
I know
you did. You know, this year, but whatever.
Anyway, but there no fighter except for Khabib wins forever. So
Floyd Mayweather, Rocky Marciano.
Those aren't fighters, they're boxes.
Excuse me. Brother,
you gotta get the casual boxing.
Ooh, brother. Like,
we're an MMA podcast. We can't.
We're a combat sports podcast, brother. Ooh, ooh, brother.
I've seen enough boxers do MMA. I'm there's a different classification.
Oh yes.
You gonna call him a boxer fighter? You an MMA fighter and a boxer?
It's the same athletic commissions, right?
The same busted house oversees both things. You're right.
The same house of cards.
All right. That brings us to a light heavyweight bout. Jiří Prochazka, Alexander Rakic. And man, you know me. I am the original Jiří Prochazka fan. I can make that claim to fame.
True.
I was on the Jiří bandwagon in 2014 when he was fighting in GFC regional Czech cards in the middle of nowhere in Europe.
Beardless Jiří, right?
Yeah, beardless Jiří, pre-Ryzen Jiří.
Pre-Samurai Jiří.
Pre-Samurai Jiří. And I picked Alexander Rakic going into this. I felt terrible doing it.
Ooh.
But I was like,
brother,
he does not get knocked out. And he is one of the rare, one of like three light heavyweights maybe out there who can actually just stick to a really nuts and bolts basic technical game that is going to give Jiří hell and grind out a win. And for a round and a half, it was right on.
Nah, you weren't reading it right. I actually caught Jiří on the live line during that part you were talking about at plus 200. But anyways, so my read going in, and the reason I picked Jiří, A, because I'm loyal, right?
Yeah, then. Okay. And it's fair, I'm not.
B, Jiří thrives in chaos. And Rakic gets out of sorts when the chaos is brought to him. So if you can lure Rakic into the chaos, you'll have your openings. If you try to sit out at range, which Jiří started the fight, like just standing on the outside, you're going to get picked apart because he's a better, Rakic is the better technician.
Yep.
But if you draw him into this crazy firefight of a brawl, he can't think that fast. He needs time to be in control. And if you take that away from him, there's your opportunity. And that's kind of what happened.
I mean, I thought it is truth. It's truth. I gotta say it. So I thought that in the wildness, Rakic could hit a takedown or put Jiří on the cage enough to just make this really ugly and boring.
Oh, you thought he was gonna grapple with him?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just grind on him.
Damn.
And he didn't. He couldn't. So that, you know, Jiří just eventually just got mad. I mean, You could see because there was a moment like he's trying to be the outfighter and all that, and just getting his leg kicked and he's pressuring and all that.
His leg was chewed up.
And it was very much a Dan Hooker, Edson Barboza kind of thing, where he just came out and he's like, oh, yeah, no, it's fine. I'll just eat the kicks. It's no big deal. And I'm just like, oh, my God, you can't look 1, 2, 3. Sure, maybe 10. You can't do it. You can't. And then in round two, he really just started to say, fuck it, I'm just pressuring as hard as I can. And I'm going to make it happen. I don't care how it happens. We're going to do it. We are going to throw down. And I don't give a shit about my leg. I don't give a shit about the counters. He ate a bunch of them that were huge. Stepped into the pocket 2 or 3 times before he finally got to hurting Rakic, and 8 shots that had him snapped his head all the way back. But man, Jiří's the truth, and I never should have doubted him.
Yeah, I feel like I oddly pick his fights correctly. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure why, but I guess I'm just lucky when it comes to him. But nah, this fight was fun, man. Jiří is that guy, and honestly, Rakic should have never insulted Bushido spirit.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have done that. He messed up.
He did.
But you don't want to piss Jiří off.
Jiří was fuming about that. And I even loved, like, afterward, his whole thing of, like, look, I know I'm not a samurai. I get it. Okay. But this means something to me. This is important to me. This is a way that, like, I ground my life. And that's good. And I'm, like, out there, like, yes. You fucking weeb. Yes, you got it. You know what? He's not too big a man to be out there and just be like, look, I get it. It's a dumb thing, but it makes a lot of sense to me and where I'm at. And like,
yeah,
I love that.
Fuck yeah, man. It's so relatable. For someone so weird and out there, he is so relatable.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'm just like, you know what, man? You are a samurai. I don't even care. You know?
Oh, I would never say he's not.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I would not after that. I mean, even if I thought he wasn't, I would tell him he was. But no, dude's a samurai.
Some people, it's good to get in their heads. You can get an advantage. Others, bad idea.
Yeah.
Like Khabib, bad idea. Jiří, bad idea.
Yeah. For Khabib, it's just because, like, in his head is all knives and anger. For Jiří, it's because there's, like, a wild ayahuasca dreamscape in there, and you're going to get incredibly lost. So, all right. That brings us to waiting for Eddie to come back. Here he is. But a featherweight bout. Aljamain Sterling, Calvin Kattar, we're going to spend as little time on this as possible. You warned me ahead of time. All credit to you. You're frozen, so you maybe can't. Hopefully you can't hear me giving you props, because frankly, I don't need that. I don't need your reinstilled confidence. But credit to Aljamain Sterling.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
What the fuck? How did I get back?
I don't know.
My laptop died. And like, oh my God. I just plugged it in at the second it died. I'm like, what the fuck?
I love it. I love it. I can't believe you were doing this without your battery plugged, without your laptop plugged in, man.
I live on the edge, man.
You do. So you did not hear me giving you props?
No.
Yeah, good.
Let's run it back. What were the props for?
Okay, the props were for you went out on Twitter and you warned me, and I did not listen. You said Aljamain Sterling is going to beat Calvin Kattar. He's the type to do it. And I'm like, I don't see it. I don't see it. You know?
Yeah, that was weird. Like, what didn't you see?
Well, Calvin Kattar doesn't get wrestled. It's not really been...
He doesn't fight wrestlers.
Well, I know. But Aljamain Sterling...
Here's the thing. So I wasn't talking in terms of, like, stylistic matches. I was talking in terms of, like, caliber of people he loses to.
Okay, and there's that. Yeah. Which, on a straight caliber thing, sure. I just... For me, it was like, look, I don't ever trust a wrestler when they go up in weight. I just don't.
Right.
And Calvin Kattar... He has not faced a wrestler like Aljo, not even close. But I'm going to trust that it'll hold up. And it turned out that he'd never faced a wrestler like Aljo, not even close. He just had no idea. Aljo was...
And it's a twofer, because Kattar was also coming off of a bad knee injury.
Yeah.
So it's like you come back from a bad knee injury to face the best wrestler you've ever faced... Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good thought. It's too bad because it's also like a fight that ended up being the grindingly boring cooler fight in the middle of this awesome fight card. But it is a legitimately incredibly impressive performance from Aljamain Sterling to go out there up a division and just totally out-wrestle a big hard puncher and just make him look bad. Make him look like he really does not belong in there at all. So, all credit to Aljo. We're going to move on because we got other shit to talk about.
Yeah, a great fight.
Yeah.
But I told you so, Zane.
You told me so. And I ignored you like nobody's business.
Usually that's the move. But not this time.
Not this
time. Is that Molly? No.
That is Molly.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I can't really turn my web camera's in my screen, but let me see if I can like here. There you go.
There she is. Look,
she's mad as hell trying to make a nest. Dogs cannot make nests, but she thinks she can do it. So
yeah.
You can get like 10 minutes of just this right now.
As did she all pick Aljo?
She did. All right, that brings us to a women's bantamweight fight, Kayla Harrison, Holly Holm.
And that weird, right? Bantamweight and Kayla Harrison?
I know. But hey, she made it. She looked like a wraith on the scales, but she made it and rehydrated. And I remember it was like, maybe it was Luke Thomas was like, oh, you know, Kayla Harrison looks drained with the weight cut. How do you think it's going to affect her? And I was just like, not even a little, not even a tiny bit. I'm sorry. But one of the things that I've seen enough in this sport is especially fighters with a lot of muscle, they can cut a lot of weight. They really can. The muscle releases water way more easily than fat.
Muscle weighs more than fat also. So if you want to, you know, chill out on your lifting sessions, you will drop weight quickly.
But the other thing was too, no matter how drained Kayla Harrison might have been, whatever, this is the whole thing about two wrestlers moving up. Always bet on the wrestler moving down. That is, if you never bet on the wrestler moving up, always bet on the wrestler moving down. Especially against somebody like Holly Holm, who has lived for the past decade on her ability to out-clinch people. Like, that's all she knows.
Right.
Kickboxing Hall of Fame, kickboxing champion. Holly Holm loves the clinch. She is a cage grinder. To the highest degree. There was no way she was ever going to fight Kayla Harrison anywhere other than the clinch. It was never going to happen. Especially not now in her 40s when she is more foot slow than she's ever been in her career.
She did hit a reversal and get on top to start the fight.
For one second. she had one moment. Oh, I loved that. Was a nifty little trick from Kayla Harrison that I absolutely loved. Is it the second time Harrison went for that head and arm throw later in the fight. Mid-air.
Oh, the step over?
No, she released her grip mid-air so that she was no longer controlling the head and stepped over at the same time. So that all she had to do was just land in top position rather than trying to control with keeping the headlock that lets the person out the back door. So it's like, no, just you've thrown them. They're in the air. They can't do shit. All you got to do is let go and jump on them. You know?
Yeah, she beasted on Holly. She beasted on Holly.
Yeah.
I don't think it surprised anyone, right? I think everybody was picking Kayla here.
Everybody but Matt Brown. I'm sorry, Matt, but
oh, Matt, come on now.
Well,
But honestly, this is the most exciting thing to happen at 135 pounds since Nunes retired. So
put her in the title. She beat Holly Holm. Put her in the title. Have her fight Raquel Pennington.
Rocky don't want that smoke. She's trying to fight Pena.
Yeah. She can go wipe Wisely. The floor. Yeah, she can go wipe the floor with Pennington and then fight Pena, because that's the fight that's actually like that is the fun fight on the horizon. And more fun than that, actually, you know what? Screw all of this.
Valentina?
No. Screw all of this. Amanda Nunes tweeted out, she's like, oh, I'm looking, you know, here I am, whatever. Like, I can just strip Pennington. God love her. I am a Pennington supporter, but just get the belt off her and just do a vacant bantamweight title fight between Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes. I'm sorry, but you know
who do you like in that fight?
If Amanda Nunes' knees are really shot, might be Harrison is just too big. Otherwise, I mean, I gotta pick Nunes. If Larissa Pacheco can do it, then Amanda Nunes can do it.
It also took Larissa 3 tries.
Sure, but Larissa is not 1/3 the fighter that Amanda Nunes is.
She actually is. She's like a poor man's Amanda Nunes. That's like exactly who she is. Is
yeah, 1/3 of Amanda Nunes. Okay. Yeah. So it takes her 3 tries.
Well, by the math, that would only mean Nunes needs 1 try.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is that
the math checks out?
Assuming Amanda Nunes is actually healthy enough to compete at a high level still, then I would pick Amanda Nunes. But it would be it's the fight. It is the coolest fight to book. You know.
Well, I mean, Amanda Nunes was the division.
Yeah, she was. So,
although if Nunes does come back and she is healthy and they do fight. And she does win the belt. She'll probably just retire again.
Yeah, I know. It's not actually like a great law. It doesn't do anything for the division long term. The real thing to do
is only thing it would do is put the division where it was before Kayla debuted.
Yeah. Yeah. So all we got to do is you do Harrison Pennington, and then you do Harrison versus Pena. And hopefully then Harrison doesn't just retire. I don't know. They gotta find more people. Get more fighters in this division because
you gotta bring Valentina up.
Yep. Bring Valentina up, do that fight, whatever it takes. Just make something happen. All right. That maybe nobody got more screwed by Max Holloway's double bonus here than Diego Lopez, who absolutely smoked Sadiq Youssef. Who has, should be noted, not been finished since Luis Gomez in 2017 back in Titan FC in his 5th pro fight or 6th pro fight.
Like, yeah, this was one of those fights where I could not envision it in my mind. Like I had no idea what it was actually going to look like because I couldn't see someone just running through Sadiq.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be a car crash and I knew Sadiq might get hurt, But I also was just like, I can't see somebody just running through him.
Right. And look what Barbosa had to do to beat him.
Yeah.
He had to get his ass kicked for an entire round before he was able to rally back.
Mm-hmm.
And for Lopez to just go out there and shit kick him in 90 seconds, less than 90 seconds. Like, yeah. That's, the man is a star.
Yeah.
Star.
I don't even know how his game is going to function at the highest levels, but he's already proved that he can beat dudes at the penultimate level. Like Sadiq Youssef is between that 10 to 15 bracket pretty cleanly.
Yeah.
So for Lopez to just go out and smoke a dude like that, like, yeah, maybe he won't beat Brian Ortega. I don't know. But
maybe he will.
Maybe he will. Who knows? Like at this point, you're in that conversation where now I want to see it. You know? I hate to do it to your boy, but like I would certainly pick him right now to beat Giga Chikadze.
That's not fair.
I know it's not. I know it's not fair. You got a couple on me tonight, so I gotta get my back.
You're grabbing at straws, man. No, but so much fun, man. Yeah, or, it sucks he didn't get a bonus.
Yeah, right.
But I think someone in the comment section said the Dana was going to give bonuses to everybody that got a finish.
Yeah.
Just not the 300 grand.
Well, screw that. It should be the 300 grand.
Oh, I know. Believe me.
But you know what fight I do want to see ASAP before he's too old and has to retire or whatever?
Who's that?
Diego Lopez, Josh Emmett. Do that fight.
I don't care about that fight.
Ah, oh, come on.
I don't care about it.
A puncher that huge? I want to see it. I don't care. Yeah. It's going to be violent no matter what. Violence.
I think he did the right move by calling out Evloev.
Yeah.
He should have won that fight.
Fair enough. Whatever. That's fine. But I want to see the Josh Emmett fight, and I want to see him against Brian Ortega at some point. Everything else, I don't
take a matchup. That has a little more intrigue for me there.
Everything else, I don't really care about. I mean, Topuria at some point will
I think him and Arnold Allen would be a banger.
Allen is out. The thing with Allen is he's very capable of being very controlled, and I don't want to see anybody, Diego Lopez, against anybody who could potentially be controlled. Controlling and like just like, oh, I'll lock this down.
All right, Lopez and Max Holloway. What's good?
Sure. I'm just Holloway's gonna fight for the title. He called his shot.
Did you see when he slept Gaethje and they panned over to Ilya and Ilya's just like sad face and hard as fuck. He's like,
he did not look excited.
And every time I've ever seen Ilya Topuria, he looks like the most confident guy in the room. Not tonight.
No, he did not.
He looks like someone stole his dog or something.
Yeah. He looked like a deeply unhappy man because he knows, like, Max is getting that fight. That's it.
Not only is he getting the fight, but he just went and banged it out with Justin fucking Gaethje and slept him with 1 second left when he didn't have to. Yikes. How can anyone look at that and be like, yeah, I got this dude's number?
Yeah, no. Nah. All right. Yeah,
Max goes and wins the 45 belt again. Holy shit. That's there's no more debate over who's the GOAT. There's a three-way tie right now. Max could pull away.
Max, like I say, he's a legend just in general. Doesn't have to be a featherweight argument anymore. He's off, and I hate that I'm gonna say this, but this is the only way it makes sense. He's not a superstar at this level, so don't try to make it something about how much money he makes or whatever. But he is in that Conor McGregor territory where Conor McGregor is an MMA legend, not because he's like the greatest featherweight or the greatest lightweight, but because he did a bunch of shit that was really impressive across multiple divisions in a way that was really cool. And it's just a run of greatness that made him great in the general sphere of MMA, you know? And that's where Max Holloway is right now, to me, is like, he's just done great shit. It's just amazing, you know? I'm not going to try to make some argument for him as the featherweight goat, the lightweight, whatever, anything like that. No, he's just great. Dustin Poirier is in that same conversation, sure. Too.
Yeah,
pound where for he's pound never won a title, but you're just like, fuck, man, you've done a lot of really cool shit in this sport, and you deserve to be recognized all the time as being a great fighter.
I mean, that's how I feel about Jim Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Jim didn't get those marquee moments.
He's never been a headline talent like that. But Jim is. If Donald Cerrone is a Hall of Famer, Jim Miller is a Hall of Famer, 100%. No question.
And I agree with Cowboy Cerrone being in the Hall of Fame. I'm a big proponent. I'm a big supporter of that.
All right. That brings us to a lightweight bout, Renato Moicano, Jalen Turner.
Hell yeah.
And Sucker of the Night Award, Jalen Turner.
He played himself.
He played himself so bad. Like, I get it. You know what? We all want MMA to be a little safer, a little more cautious, a little more on the, like, oh, you hurt somebody really bad. Maybe they don't need to get hurt 10 more times before this fight is over. But, like, all you did is drop Moicano, and he was still, like, getting up and focused, right? He got dropped. He was rocked for a second, and he was right back to getting up and going. Like,
all right. I got two trains of thoughts for this.
Yeah.
One, Turner's last fight hurts the guy, Bobby Green, gets on top, starts beating the piss out of him, and the referee doesn't do shit about it.
Yes.
It's a prolonged beating. Like, he's sitting there taking years off of Bobby Green's life. That's got to be an uncomfortable place for Jalen Turner, right? Because, you know, he's not out here to hurt people. Like, yes, this is his job, but he's not that guy. Right.
I know. I feel bad for all the fighters that have that mindset, because there are a few out there who are just like, I am here to hurt people, and they are in exactly the right place. And for the guys that aren't there, as you say, most of them, it's always a little, there's got to be a constant cognitive dissonance there.
Hell yeah.
You know?
It's like, do I follow up? But, and here's my other train of thought. He was trying to get that $300,000 walk-off knockout bonus. He was like, oh, I knocked him out. Walk off like a boss. Had he been out, he might have gotten it. But he didn't knock him out. Moicano got up and fucked him up.
Yep.
Which I thought was going to happen, by the way. I picked Moicano here.
I picked Turner because I thought he was going to knock him out.
Honestly, I think I'm the only one from our staff picks who picked Moicano.
I think you might be.
I just couldn't trust Turner to stay on his feet. There's a lot of recency biased with what he did to Green, and Moicano's been knocked out plenty of times.
Yeah.
So I think the clear narrative there is that, oh, he's going to chin check him. And he actually hurt him to the body as soon as the fight started.
Yeah.
And I was a little nervous. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
I couldn't have been more wrong here. But nah, he kind of screwed himself.
He really had a finish.
He didn't want it. And, you know, Moicano capitalized on it.
Yes. And then went on clearly an increasing progression of massively unhinged rants that at some point are going to end with him threatening, like, I don't know, taking a life or something. Like,
no. Nah, he's just passionate, and English isn't his first language, and he's trying to promote himself and understands that he can't just be quiet. He needs to talk some shit, and his biggest buzzes have been when he's like, money, Moicano, and he's doing that crazy spiel.
He's going through all the amendments. Like, talk to me when you get to the 14th Amendment.
He was like doing the Bill Moicano. Of Rights. You know, hey. He was playing to the crowd, I guess.
Yeah, no, he is. It's just, I don't know.
Oh, I forgot to mention about Lopez, right? The man is such a gent, right? He gets his finish, 90 seconds. He goes over to Dana White. He's like, please, sir, may I hop out of the cage? And all right, come on. So he lets him hop out of the cage, right? So he goes over to Dana, says a couple words, daps up Dana White, skips over Mark Zuckerberg to dap up Hunter Campbell, and then leaves. And I'm like, yeah, snub the fucking billionaire. Hell yeah. Even though Dana's probably a billionaire too. Or
yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's all relative morality at that point.
Yeah. That was cool. That was like an extra... Lopez is a man of the people.
That's right. All right. That brings us to a women's strawweight bout. Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez, and I picked Rodriguez. The opportunity.
You picked a lot of losers on this card, Zane. What's happening?
I was being daring. I was living bold, Eddie.
I picked Garbrandt, so I feel your pain.
Yeah, you lived extra bold.
Hey, I only got two wrong this card, though.
Yeah, well, one of them was Cody Garbrandt.
Hey, I have to give y'all a chance, right?
Yeah. I picked Marina Rodriguez, and there were a lot of opportunities for her. The fight was right there for her to take. But Jessica Andrade, she's just too strong. She just hits too hard. That's all there is to it.
And Marina doesn't hit enough of her strikes. Like, she's a big range person who just, like, paws a bunch. But it's like, you gotta hit them. You can't go full leaf blower, as you like to say. You gotta.
No. But the thing I was surprised about is that Andrade is not actually that great a clinch fighter, and Rodriguez is.
I think you're sleeping on her clinch a little bit. On Andrade. I think
Andrade has been slept in her clinch a little bit.
She's been what?
She's been slept in the clinch several times.
Sure, but she's also won plenty of fights in the clinch. She slammed Rose Namajunas on her fucking skull from the clinch. She caught a standing arm triangle on Lamoche in the clinch. Like, she's dangerous in the clinch, man.
She can be dangerous.
She's won UFC fights from the clinch.
She's just, it's not actually as good of a position as it seems like it should be for as strong as she is.
But she's so short. Like, if you're short, the clinch is not where you want to be.
Yeah, and Marina Rodriguez has a very good clinch game, and she had a lot of chances to just knee Andrade right in the head in this fight. And she just didn't. She didn't take it. She was not really. Well,
when you throw those knees, what's up in the air as you're throwing?
Yeah.
Fucking chin, and like you were saying, Andrade hits so fucking hard.
She does. That was really what it came down to. Is that Andrade only needed a couple of moments each round to just have Marina Rodriguez then hurt and on skates for like a full minute.
And risk adverse.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
Yep.
She was scared to get hit out there, which I understand.
Yep.
I'm just saying. She still won
the fight on one judge's scorecard.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that.
Yeah. I didn't agree with it either. But all right. Puts Andrade is suddenly, you know, she's making another little run here. They're probably going to do Tatiana Suarez versus Weili Zhang
at
some point in the very near future. But Andrade, she's got a win over Lemos. She's ranked fourth in that division. You know, she's...
So if history has anything to say about this, she will likely go take her next fight at flyweight. and lose
it,
you know? She's got a weird career.
She does. All right. That brings me to a lightweight bout. Bobby Green, Jim Miller. Love to see it. Hate to see it.
Exactly.
I'm a big Bobby Green fan. And those last two rounds, when he was just flowing, like, that was pretty. Who fights like Bobby Green when he's just flowing like that, you know?
Maybe Max Holloway when he's flowing, but other than that, not many people, man.
It is just beautiful to watch, but it does suck to see Jim Miller just have to, like, really get pantsed by the end of that fight. Like, I had the fight 29-28 green. I could see a 10-8 round three, 29-27. But one judge had it 30-25.
Who was that? Let's put him on blast.
Let me find out. Let me see if I can find out.
Who... Nobody should get away with a scorecard like that. The first round was pretty close.
Yeah, it was. So the judge that had it. Oh, no, that's wrong. There we go. Judge who had it 30-25 was Tony Weeks. Yeah.
I wonder what he was watching.
Yeah, it was a weird one. And actually, two judges had it.
Well, one had like a 30-26, maybe.
Yeah, one 30-25, one 30-26. Actually, the 30-25 was David Letheby. Weeks had it 29-26.
29-26.
So they both gave Green 10-8s in rounds two and rounds three. And he got stung pretty bad in at least the second round.
Yeah, he was fucked up and bleeding all over the place.
Green got stung really bad in the second round. Like, he got clubbed at least at one point in that round. May not have. He wasn't close really to low. Losing.
Right.
But, I don't think you.
It wasn't. I'll tell you this. Maybe the third round could have been a 10-8, but
yeah,
rounds one and two was you can't give those 10-8s and then not give a 10-7 or a 10-8 in the first round for the Whaley Yan fight.
Yeah. 10-8 is a round. 10-8 could be a reasonable round three score, but anything before that, like, it was just a good competitive fight. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
Green can't be eating the shots he's eating in that fight and be getting 10-8 rounds. It's not reasonable.
Yeah, that was a little odd for sure.
But it
was alarming too when I heard it. I'm like, nah, we're not doing that with the judges tonight. Come on.
No. Fortunately, it was fine. It was not a bad night for the judges. But then Bobby Green called out Patty Pimblett and, agreed. I would absolutely be thrilled to watch Green Pimblett in Manchester. And if Green could just show up and tune him up, that'd be a lot of fun. Honestly, you know what? I don't hate watching Patty fight enough to wish him to lose. But so even if he gets a win, I just think it'd be a fun fight. It'd be a fun matchup. And since
I'm not a Patty hater. Like, no. I think he brings his own sort of fun to the fight game.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a world beater.
No, he is.
But that's okay.
He is a very exciting fighter in pretty much every fight and not a technician and not a dominant athlete. Just very exciting, you know?
Yeah, he's a fighter who goes and finds a way to win.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think it's a fight he might take too, because Green's still got a ranking spot, and it would probably feel like, if I'm Pimblett, Green probably feels like one of the easiest ranked fighters to beat in lightweight. Maybe that's wrong.
One of the most unassuming fighters.
Yeah, one of the most
unassuming. Bobby Green looks so beatable, right? You look at his record, you watch him fight, I can beat this guy, his hands are low. But when you get in there and he's shucking and jiving on you, you know.
Oh, all right. We're going to bantamweight now. Davison Figueiredo, Cody Garbrandt.
I fucked up, man.
You fucked up. You know what? Credit to you, though. Davison Figueiredo also fucked up. Because he laid back and he was like, all right, I'll do what I do. I'll let Cody Garbrandt come to me and I'll counterpunch him. Davison Figueiredo got hurt like three times in the first round trying to time Cody Garbrandt, letting Cody Garbrandt land first and trying to time him. He could not do it.
And that's what I thought was going to happen. I thought Cody was going to knock him out. I really did.
But credit to credit to Figgy, because he's like, nope, not today. I will, you know, Garbrandt has gotten away with being fast and scrambling well as a wrestler a lot in his career. And Figgy was just like, I'm just going to lock you down. I will just take you down and not let this happen.
I wonder if his corner said something to him, like in between to Figgy, in between the first and the second, like, hey, stop standing with this motherfucker.
I think what happened really is that Garbrandt came out in round two and he went after him. Garbrandt went after Figueredo. It was like, oh, great, I'm hurting you. You can't catch up to me. And he just tried to take the fight to him. And Figgy was just like, shit, no. Body lock. I'm not getting knocked out. I'm not getting overwhelmed this way. He had to. He didn't have a choice, you know?
Could be, yeah. It could be. Man. It was weird watching him get submitted. Was that the first time?
Yeah, you know what? I think it is.
Because he usually just gets knocked out, right?
Yep. He's been knocked out four times and decisioned once. This is his first submission loss. Figgy calling for the title shot after this. He's not going to get it. But they could hook him up with Henry Cejudo. I'd watch that.
That's a banger.
Yeah.
That's definitely a banger. If Cejudo's going to keep going.
Yep.
Sure. Why not?
So. All right. On that note, I mean, we could keep going back and talking about this all night, but it's already been an hour and a half.
The greatest card of all time. The perfect card to close in.
Perfect card. Honestly, just awesome. I'm not going to say there haven't been other perfect cards out there in MMA history, but this was one of them. Just a perfect night of fights. So on that note.
And I was only wrong twice.
I was wrong a lot more than that, but I was not wrong about Cody Garbrandt. That's what matters to me.
That's all that matters.
To access the bonus content of this episode, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to themmadrawpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.